Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morado.
This is a podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1, Friday mornings, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Bolan. And we talk about streaming releases, we talk about cinema releases, we talk about whether the heat is on. And the heat is definitely on, or maybe lukewarm or off, with our second review of this podcast, Simon, which takes us back to the 80s.
That's right. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., based on the original Beverly Hills Cop saga, but the title comes from the Harold Faltermeyer theme music, which actually, and we'll talk about this afterwards, was not as prominent as I expected it to be. But the H is definitely O. The heat is on is what opens the film. And I think we have a good time talking about that and introducing Pam to the lore of Beverly Hills Cop. But first, a bit more serious theatrical business to deal with, Tristan, where you're looking at a newie from director Jeff Nichols.
Yes, The Bike Riders, a drama about a motorcycle club that becomes a gang through the 60s and 70s, based on a book of photographs, and starring a great collection of actors known for their accent work, which is Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, and Jodie Comer. So we're going to hear a little bit from the trailer right now.
I'm thinking of starting a riding club.
Why? All those clubs do is sit around talking about motorcycles.
That's what we do. When I was a boy, I had a
mind of my own. You don't belong nowhere else, so they belong together.
But you're the man in charge.
I'm Johnny. We're the Vandals.
I'm Benny.
I like you guys.
Your boyfriends are getting into trouble.
What the hell were you thinking back there?
Nothing. I saw you scoring off of them guys. What do I need to think for?
Yeah, you and me, kid.
Every Friday on Breakfast, we take some time for the Cinematic Arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babes. They are Simon Morado and Tristan Fidler. Good morning.
Good morning.
So close. How are you both? Simon, how are you?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be here, back with Tristan and yourself once again, and a couple of interesting films on the docket this week.
Yeah, there are a couple of interesting films. There's a few interesting films out and about at the moment. It feels like a bit of a treat, like a lolly bag, to go to the cinema for me at the moment, because there's lots of things going on.
Including the Rev Film Fest.
Oh. Yeah, it is. We're going to be talking about the Rev Film Fest a little bit later, and we did a little wrap-up of the Movie Squad's favourites last week. So if you want to check back in on that episode, it's a bit of a guide, a how-to approach Rev Film Fest, which was great for me because I haven't been before. And it was a very helpful way to sort of understand what was going on there, a taster of some of the treats, but also just an encouragement to go looking at the actual sort of situation, the program that's going on. But before we get into movies this morning, I'm going to talk about a movie that I went to see recently.
Please.
And a hilarious experience that I had in this cinema. I went to see Inside Out 2.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay. It was good. Look, I just think the first one was so delightful that it was hard. The bar was too high, but it was still really gorgeous.
But this one has ennui.
Yeah, and this one also has Iowa Debris in it, which is, oh, gorge, amazing. Yes, it has ennui, this French annoyed teenager.
Adele as one of the
yes, from Blue is the Warmest Colour. Brilliant casting there. I was like, teenage me was just having a moment where we were looking at the casting. So that was great. Love Iowa Debris as Envy. That's very funny. And all the new emotions, it's great. But an extremely funny experience happened to me during this movie. Now, you know how we've got a bit of an understanding about my terrifying movie watching practices? We've spoken about how I eat in the cinema. I don't do it loudly. I'm not a disruptor.
No. But you are like a weather system in a cinema.
Oh, God. Like, Simon. I'm trying to give myself cred to these listeners at home who must just think I'm an absolute menace in a cinema, which, look, I am a little bit. But there was some people next to me. And they were eating sunflower seeds, right? Okay, sunflower seeds, you know, like the, they come in the thing and you got to like pop them open and get the thing inside, right? So I thought, okay, they're just going to eat, they're just going to pop a bunch of them before they start the movie, right? Because it was like all through the trailers, there was a bunch of sunflower seed popping. That did not happen, right? The sunflower seed popping went through the movie. We got about half an hour into the cinema. And they were quite close to me. It was one of those cinemas where you're, like, in the big lounges. It was very cute, you know. And I had to reach across the chasm, sarcasm. That's a joke if you've seen Inside Out 2. Anyway, reach across the chasm, which was our armrests, and be like, hey, you need to cool it with the sunflower seeds.
Wow.
Do you think that that's acceptable for me to have? It was so disruptive
and
loud.
Yes. Yeah.
As professional moviegoers.
I like to avoid confrontation, so I just would move rather than have to. But I know that Simon.
You know that I thrive on confrontation, and I consider it actually. You know, we have spoken about this in the past. Like, people have jurisdictions in a cinema.
Okay.
Like, there are certain places you can't go and shush certain areas if they're not in your jurisdiction.
What do you mean?
Like, if someone is rowdy in the back row and you're in the fourth row from the back. Sadly, unfortunately, you have to move. You have to go somewhere else. But if you are in the row in front of that rowdy crowd, then you actually have to stand up and turn around. And unfortunately, yes, you do have to confront them.
I love confrontation in the cinema. My friends are unfortunately very aware of it because I love to be like, shh, you know? I love to be the shusher, librarian of the cinema. But this was met with anger. This was met with like... I'm in it because it was like a deluxe six. We'd all paid a lot of money to be there.
Sure.
But I also was like, we've all paid a lot of money to be here. Anyway, that's my qualm from my last movie watching experience. And I'd
it
really
sounds
love
like anger one
yes.
day.
Yes.
Yeah, they think, that was very smooth, Simon. So that's my qualm. If you have thoughts on whether what I did was acceptable or not for 0405 921 921. It's not really talkback radio that we do here, but that's kind of talkback.
I want to hear it. Absolutely.
I want to hear the thoughts. Maybe I was wrong. But let's get started with the actual movie squad. Let's get started with our first movie. Tristan, talk to me about The Bike Riders.
Yes, and maybe, you know, if people were eating sunflower seeds during this movie because of the roar of the motorcycle engines, it would have been a bit more like white noise and you wouldn't have to, you know, it damage your movie-going experience. But
I thought you were going to say maybe you could get some street toughs into the cinema to back you up.
Yes, because this is all about the Bike Riders is about a motorcycle club that becomes a gang over the course of two decades from the 60s to the 70s. But it's a new drama and one that's been delayed. It was delayed because of the actors' strike. But then it also changed studios in terms of who distributed it. But it comes from director Jeff Nichols, who hails from Arkansas and is best known for making movies about, I guess, Midwestern America, films like Shotgun Stories, Take Shelter, Mud, works a lot with Michael Shannon, who's also in this movie. But the three stars on the poster are Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, and Jodie Comer. So,
what a trio.
So you're happy about this cast list stuff?
I think I am. Yeah. I'll let you keep going.
Oh, no. But like, Simon, are you a fan of Jeff Nichols? Have you been anticipating this movie?
Very much so. I'm a big fan of Take Shelter and Mud and, hey, Midnight Special. Shout out Tristan. And also Loving. So A Shotgun Story is the only film of his I haven't seen. Mm. But I really appreciated his tempo and his temperament of films. Like, it's a very specific kind of indie-American filmmaking. So The Bike Riders did feel like it was positioned as a bit of a, you know, what if he did a quote-unquote blockbuster? I know it's not a blockbuster, but it's a larger-scale movie. And Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, and Jodie Comer, I mean, could you hire three actors who had more insane perspectives on accents.
I have questions about this.
And Jodie Comer, I'm a huge fan of, obviously, but we'll do any accent at any moment for any amount of money. And I mean that with love and respect, but Austin Butler and Tom Hardy, obviously notorious for their own takes on accents.
Yeah, it's a big accent movie, and this is part of, for me, the enjoyment of the film is watching them kind of go to town in different ways. Like, Austin Butler is, well, to talk a little bit about the plot, it's actually based on a book of photographs by a guy called Danny Lyon called The Bike Riders, and documenting his time interviewing and following Gang, a motorcycle club that this was based on. And he's actually a character in the movie played by Mike Faust from Challengers. And the narrative is organized around interviews that he's holding with Kathy, played by Jodie Comer, who's one of the wives of the guys who make up this gang called the Vandals. And her character is married to Benny, Austin Butler, who's a free spirit, who gets into trouble in the opening scene because he's in a bar drinking by himself and he won't take off his colors, which is like, you know, the jacket that has the Vandals on the back by these locals. They're like, take off that jacket. He's like, no. And then he gets like beat up. But the person who runs the gang is Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. He's inspired because one night at home, he's like a working stiff who's a trucker with a wife and children, but he watches TV and sees The Wild One, the Marlon Brando biker movie from the 50s, and gets inspired. And this kind of feeds into Tom Hardy's accent work because it feels like he's doing a tribute to Marlon Brando in The Wild One. So he sounds kind of a little bit like a cartoon frog in that. And you got to love Tom Hardy because he'll always make a big choice, and he makes a big choice here. And then Austin Butler is more like, you know, it's definitely in the Elvis arena. Like it's nothing that unusual. But Jodie Comer is doing this kind of Midwestern accent, which I was quite enthralled by. Like she is the narration for this movie and is a lot of the time telling the photographer what happened, but also the audience. And I just loved her character and the way that it was kind of framed around her perspective, because it's all about these guys who start off with a motorcycle club that's about kind of racing motorcycles, but then eventually becomes a gang and a form of identification. But then, you know, things happen in terms of instituting rules, the way that they kind of strike terror in small towns when they roll through. And then people who join up in the wake of the Vietnam War who are more kind of involved in drugs and violence. So I really liked this film. This was a film that was, I liked it when I was watching it, and then afterwards I liked it. But the more I thought about it days after, I really appreciated it more, because what you were saying before, Simon, about that Jeff Nichols, the director, and his kind of vibe, there's a very kind of mellow hangout vibe to this film. There is like dark moments, there is violence, but it's really about just kind of spending time with these characters in this world, in this kind of culture that they've created. And it's also just like awash with that guy character actors, including Australian actors Damon Harriman, Toby Wallace, Boyd Holbrook, Norman Reedus, who when he showed up, because I went to a preview screening that was a lot of you know, bike enthusiasts were invited to. So when he pops up, there was a ripple of recognition in the audience.
He really owns a bike.
Yes, he is. He's the real deal. And even folk singer Will Oldham shows up in a moment as well. But there's a great cinematography and a feeling for the period, and you know, it's been compared a little bit to Goodfellas with the use of pop tunes from the era, you know, freeze frames and kind of flashbacks. But it's definitely not as kind of full-on as something like Goodfellas. It's a bit more kind of, yeah, mellow is the word I keep referring to, but I think that's one of its strengths as well. So no, I know you haven't seen this, Simon, but are you keen to see this? Is there something about it that is drawing you in?
Absolutely. I'm really excited to catch it. And I do, I'm only partly being facetious, but Jodie Comer is a great actor,
yeah.
You know, and you know, from Killing Eve, and haven't been able to see her in a range of movies thus far, so it is exciting, you know, besides Free Guy.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a big step. I was thinking about that in the way I was like,
what a Free Guy.
Yeah. Like, that's not a good movie, but, like, this is a better role for her.
Exactly,
here.
Yeah. And Prima Facie, which she won the Tony for and is now playing in Perth with a different cast, obviously. So I feel like I know she's great and I like her a lot, but haven't had the opportunity to see her in a lot of other dramatic work. So she's the anchor for me, you know, why I would go and see the Bike Riders. But that whole rattling off of those guys, Damon Harriman is included, you know, he's great, and I'm excited to see this one.
And it's interesting as a film because it's a, you know, Mike Faust is in this and Challengers is in the air, but it is a love triangle, not as kind of full on as Challengers. It's a bit more kind of like restrained, but there's a scene where Tom Hardy's character wants Austin Butler to take over the gang to be the leader, and the way it's shot is like this. It's like at night and it's this kind of romantic scene. Ooh. And my partner Sally afterwards was just like, there's more tension between, there's more chemistry between Tom Hardy and Austin Butler than Austin Butler and Jodie Comer, who are married in the film. But it really is them fighting over Austin Butler, who is this kind of like, he's the kind of symbol of the free spirit. Like he wants for nothing. He's like, you know, content to just like look cool and drag on a cigarette and do his Austin Butler thing. So it's a real like star making role for Austin Butler. But I mean, with this cast and these accents and all this stuff, what do you think about this, Pam? Would you be interested in seeing this film?
I definitely want to see this film. Yeah. I kind of wrote it off. I saw a lot of press about it. Yeah. I kept seeing videos pop up on TikTok and over on Instagram and just videos in general. And I thought, oh, it's another Austin Butler movie. And I just was like, oh God, because I didn't watch Elvis and I put a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was a bit, you know, alarmed by it. But having watched the trailer and then watching a couple of interviews and looking at who is in this movie, the cast is the draw card. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's so delightful and charming, whether he's doing a cheesy frog English American accent or not.
Yeah.
I love Jodie Comer from Killing Eve. She really, I think she is so enticing to watch. She's so interesting and confusing and to try and understand. And yeah, famously will do any accent and has spoken about that in multiple press interviews and is very funny. And I'm curious about what she does. And I love the addition of Toby Wallace from who folks might know from Baby Teeth, which was an absolutely devastating Australian movie from a couple of years ago now. I definitely want to see this movie. I love the idea of a love triangle that is sort of encouraging you to think about Tom Hardy and Austin Butler being together. What a delight. Oh, my God.
like it's still a bit like restrained. It doesn't go the full Challenges Luca Guadagnino route. But there is a kind of like a tenderness that like balances the kind of the cool swagger of, you know, guys in the jackets, like drinking beers and like smoking cigarettes. So
can I ask, because one of the things I have read is about the sort of the subtextual homoeroticism. Like, is it there as a subtext or is it really hidden under quite a few layers?
I mean, I think that if you saw this scene and the way that they like, I think it's like, it's there. Like, it's not like... Yeah, it's not kind of...
It's not just the audience bringing it to
Yeah,
the,
no, no. Okay. It's there because... But it's... Like, I think it's more interesting than maybe I thought initially when I was going to see it. And but yeah, The Bike Riders, it's out in cinemas now. It's, I think, a really worthwhile drama, even if it might be a bit more mellow than some people might be anticipating. They might be thinking there's going to be more action or more kind of violence. But yeah, I really liked it. Yeah.
I love the tenderness as a describer. That's even makes me want to go even more. I saw this line in the trailer that was Austin Butler going, "Some people would rather crash than slow down." And I was like, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't go see this movie. But you've brought me back. I'm going to go. I'm going to do it, I think. It's going to be all right. We're going to get into a track from the soundtrack of this album. Oh, that was a jumble of all the wrong words. We're going to get into a cut from the soundtrack of this movie from the Shangri-Las. This is Out in the Streets.
I almost admire you. Still on these streets, running and cutting. I'm just amazed. Doesn't get to you.
It's the lyrics, just picture, and so hard that your head can't picture.
Watch your ass out there, okay?
I'm gonna be fine. They love me in Beverly Hills.
Detective Foley, you ever read your own file? Shootouts, disturb the peace, a lot.
Please tell me you didn't get arrested again.
Twice, but I broke out.
We're talking all things movies here on Breakfast this morning. It's 7:48. Tristan and Simon are in for Movie Squad. It's looking like a pretty rainy weekend is forecast, so movies are definitely on the cards for me. What are you two up to this weekend?
Oh, well, it's so funny you mention that, Pam, because on Sunday, Tristan and I are hosting a special Movie Squad presented screening of Lake Mungo for Revelation Film Festival. Sunday, late afternoon, at 5:45, I think, is the screening, right, Tristan?
Yes.
We're going to be putting on this this magical, incredible, terrifying film to be followed by a Q&A with actor Rosie Traynor and cinematographer John Brawley. Are you excited, Tristan?
Yes, I am, because this is a film I'd heard about by reputation and only saw for the first time this year. But it's definitely, like, it's a great... example of a found footage movie or a mock documentary, and it's a story about the disappearance of a young girl and the kind of the interviews with the family and the community who knew her. But it is really like, it feels very Australian, but also it reminded me of shows like The Extraordinary, if people remember that kind of thing. But it's really well done in terms of being a kind of a low budget film that creates such a kind of feeling of eeriness and terror, I think, eventually. So yeah, definitely Lake Mungo one to check out, and it's great to be presenting it and talking to people involved afterwards, all thanks to Revelation Film Festival.
Oh, if you want to find out more, you can jump on the Revelation Film Festival website. You can have a look at all the details there in case you just forgot all the times that they've said. But it's going to be great. Look, spoiler, not going to be there because I'm scared of it, but all of my housemates will be there. So they will be, yeah. So they're all in for it, but I can't be doing that. I'm too scared.
Well, Monday morning, you'll have to tell me how well they slept. Yeah. Which sounds, do that.
Maybe it'll be in a less creepy way. Maybe it'll be a slumber party in my bed. I'll be like the safe person who didn't know what was going on. But it sounds like a really brilliant time. And if anyone was to take care of me through a horror movie, it's these two that I would trust to sort of, you know, hold my hand through the process. Let's get into our second movie review this morning. Simon, talk to me about, I'm going to say this name in, there's so many semicolons, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F.
Yes, that's right, colon, Axel F. This is the fourth entry in the Beverly Hills Cop saga, which means we are just six shy of the Beverly Hills Cop Decameron. now, Pam, what is your familiarity with the Beverly Hills Cop legacy?
I'm going to let you guess.
Nil.
Correct.
And that's perfectly fine. It is a franchise that began in 1984, initially conceived as a vehicle for Sylvester Stallone. It was meant to be just a straight-ahead action film, and then they hired the young Eddie Murphy to take on the role of Axel Foley.
How long has it been going?
Well, they say comedy is timing, right, Pam? And get this, they made three films between 84 and 94, and then they waited just right 30 full years to make the fourth film.
Well, there'd always been talks, and I think there was an attempt to make a show, like where he would play like the chief of police and his son would be the focus, but that didn't, I think it was like there was a pilot film that it didn't happen. So there's been, and I think Eddie Murphy has always talked about how he was soured on the third movie and wanted to do something that would kind of like, at least that wouldn't be the last Beverly Hills Cop movie.
Yes, and you've revisited the films recently, Tristan, is that right?
Like a year or two. I mean, these are films, like, for me, Pam, this, like, these films were just things that I grew up with that were always on TV and things that I would watch. And definitely seeing the trilogy again like a couple of years ago. Yeah, the first one's a classic. It's definitely an example of that Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer 80s style. Like, it's really highly produced. Like, there's all these montages and songs that would sell the soundtrack that were all kind of big hits, like The Heat Is On, etc. I really like the second one because it was directed by Tony Scott, who makes it look like a full-on action movie rather than an action comedy. But the big strength has always been, like, Eddie Murphy and what he brings to it. And he's definitely, you know, mellowed out over the decades since 1984. But he is the big draw card to this franchise.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not as frenetic as he once was. And Beverly Hills Cop, I saw that for the first time. I was a teenager. Even then, I was like, this is not a good film. And it's directed by Martin Brest, who made very good films and some not-so-good films. But it isn't a very good action film. What elevates it is the fact that Eddie Murphy was sort of let off the, you know, he was let free to do his thing and do his shtick, and that was very funny. And that is the case again here. It is great to see him as Axel Foley. This is a guy I respect hugely because he found like a look at the age of 24 and then continues to dress exactly the same way at the age of 64. So, you know, he's got the sort of sweater, a sweatshirt and a bomber jacket on top of it.
Okay.
And that's fine. But Axel Foley, he, you know, for your sake, Pam, he is a Detroit cop, you know, fast-talking, streetwise, who in the first film had to investigate a crime in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
And I don't know quite the way to phrase it, but it was as if, like, a fish was no longer in water.
Oh.
And so he goes to Beverly Hills and he has all these crazy run-ins. And 40 years later, here he is back once again. He's now an older gentleman, but he's still the Axel Foley you know and love. But his great friend from the initial series, Billy Rosewood, has gone missing. And Billy, of course, is played by Judge Reinhold, who, off the air, Pam, you were saying you're a huge fan of.
No. I don't know who that is.
And this is why they have to teach history in schools again, Tristan. Judge Reinhold was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but also, you know, a key element of this franchise. And I guess this is where Beverly Hills Cop : Axel F falls into lega sequel territory, which is the phrase of when you make a sequel 20, 30, 40 years down the track and you get the whole gang back together.
I do know who Judge Reinhold is. I remember him from Santa Claus as the other dad.
Oh, yeah.
That's about it.
Sure.
Well, it's probably the last movie he was in. Like, he's not recognizable because he's not in as much, aside from the...
Sorry for the
sidebar. No, well, I was going to say Arrested Development fans will know him from Mock Trial with Judge Reinhold, which was a very funny joke from that show. But look, the long and short of it here is that he's got to go back to Beverly Hills once again. Pam, you won't believe it. In Beverly Hills, right, there are these women, and they have the smallest dogs.
Do they?
Yeah.
What kind of dogs are we talking?
Like, they're tiny.
Tiny. Do they put them in bags?
Yes, they do exactly that. And these are the kinds of observations that the Beverly Hills Cop franchise really traffics in. And so he has to go investigate it, and he also reunites with his estranged daughter, played by Taylor Page from Zola. And Tristan, you've seen this as well, and I want to get your take on it.
Sure.
When I found out that Axel Foley's daughter was a criminal defense lawyer?
Oh, my God.
I was almost sickened to my purse.
Yes, it's a real, you know, there's a tension there. They have to reunite. They are estranged. And, I think at one point, Paul Reiser's character, who's the police chief, who, you know, is a feature in these movies as well, says that these days people want social workers rather than swashbucklers.
Okay.
And Axel Foley is a swashbuckler, but, you know, his daughter has a little bit of the Foley charm, you know, particularly these scenes where they have to, get into places and fast talk people, which is the kind of the whole vibe of these movies.
Yeah, I was personally shocked when they actually started to realize they had more in similar and more in common than they
you
had
were
in
shocked,
different.
Were you?
I was shocked. Gobsmacked. I was shocked.
Yeah.
So obviously the movie is bad, and it is directed by Australian Mark Molloy, who actually has made some very good ads that I watched afterwards, because it is a slick movie, it's a polished movie, and there are a couple, you know, I will say this more so than the Martin Brest original, there are not good action scenes, but it has a kind of sheen to it. And one of the running jokes is that Axel keeps, like, commandeering these different vehicles, like a snowplow and a Meter Maid sort of little car, whatever you call that. And there are some moments, like, again, the movie is bad, but Eddie Murphy is still funny. And just like Coming to America 2 was very bad, there are moments where when Eddie Murphy just kind of goes on a riff that I laughed out loud and couldn't help myself by doing so. So there's a real tension. And, you know, Tristan, I assume that you felt similarly, although maybe have a bit more enthusiasm for the saga as a whole.
No, I mean, like, this was okay. Like, it was definitely better than Coming to America, which felt like, this felt like a bit more like a movie, but at the same time, it does feel like a Netflix movie in that there were parts where I was kind of a little bit checked out and sort of, it was just like on. But, Eddie Murphy, even in this like mellow older age, like he can still take like a little bit of business and make it work. Like there's a whole bit where it's like his daughter has taken a different surname. So he has this joke where he's like, but Fall just sounds better to say. And it was just like such a silly line, but the way he delivered it just made me laugh and chuckle. So, I mean, he is like the main draw card for this. And I think if you're a fan of those original movies, if you're deep into those three previous movies, you will probably, you know, enjoy this and get what you want out of it. I think for anyone like yourself, Pam, who's not exposed to these movies and will probably know Eddie Murphy more as, like my partner was like not watching the TV and just hearing the screen and just thinking all I can hear is the donkey from Shrek. But
I think I would be in the same camp.
Yeah, so they might just glaze over a little bit, but it's on Netflix. You can watch it whenever you want.
And you can also not watch it whenever you want or watch it while on your phone. And that is how the movie was designed to be experienced. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is also in it. Pam, that's, I don't have anything more to add really than that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know why he's in it. It feels like a weird, like putting a cherry on a sandwich. You know, like it feels like, you know, like, yeah, your cherry on a sundae, but like this is not the right thing for him accessorized with. Anyway, I feel weird about it. I feel weird about this movie, and I think I'm not going
to
watch it.
Hey, I still feel weird about asking you to tell me what your housemates do on Sunday night.
Slumber party. It's going to be fine. Well, Tristan and Simon will be with you, of course, on the Movie Squad podcast if you want to listen in for all the extra bits that they deliver for the folks who tap into the podcast. You can find it wherever you normally get your podcasts. But, of course, listen in to RTRFM every Friday at 7:30, and you can hang out with the Movie Squad, Simon and Tristan, for another great week. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So there we have it. It's funny, at the start of the podcast, you had mentioned the reason why Beverly Hills Cop 4 is called Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, which is, I think my partner Sally was like, why is it called this? And it was like, because usually, like, there are, you know, legacy sequels where the full name of the character is given. I think at one point, Rambo 4, which in the end just was called Rambo, but it was supposed to be John Rambo, or the kind of the way, and you know, that works as a subtitle. But yeah, shouldn't it be Beverly Hills Cop Axel Foley? Axel F only makes sense if people know the popular sting or theme from the movie by Harold Faltermeyer.
And even if you go, well, Crazy Frog made Axel F a global household sensation, that was also 20 years ago. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I was hoping, I was almost waiting for the moment, like, you know, in the Creed movies, right?
Yes, yeah.
When finally, the bell rings and the proper, I've blanked on Bill Conti's theme, really, yes. The Rocky theme kicks in. That is such a great moment in every Creed film, every Rocky film. I was waiting for it to happen in Axel F, and it kind of doesn't. And then there's like a Lil Nas X remix over the closing credits. But there was a fun element, I guess, in that the soundtrack to Axel F does pull, you know, songs from previous entries. You know, I thought it was fun that the movie opened with The Heaters On, even though it's like such an obvious nod. I also enjoyed there was a Hot in the City, like, remixed with Coi Leray's Players, which I was like, okay, that's fine. Like I like the nostalgia of it generally, but it points to the issue with these Lego sequels or you know, these late long in the tooth sequels, however you want to call them, which is that it's kind of just remaking the original.
Yeah.
And certainly the climax to this film is a remake of the original.
It's almost kind of like a, you know, beat for beat.
Yes.
And then, you know, like recreating these moments from the first one. But yeah, it's funny that in the first 10 minutes, yeah, they play The Heaters On, which is the title credits sequence theme from Beverly Hills Cop 1. Then they also put in Shakedown, which was the title credit song for Beverly Hills Cop 2. And so, yeah, they do include, I guess, some original tunes. But yeah, it's not really, doesn't have the same weight behind it where the first movie is. I think, you know, it's with that first movie, that sense of the Bruckheimer and Simpson kind of MO of putting all this money into the gloss and to all these other elements so that you have a great collection of songs that you can turn into music videos, which are trailers for the movie, which was like, there were like four, you know, hit singles from that soundtrack for Beverly Hills Cop 1. Yeah, I mean, there was a part where I was enjoying some of it, and then, but it's also funny the way that they kind of play around with those moments where he, you know, has to sweet talk his way into things. And there's the moment where he goes into the hotel and starts doing a British accent into this character, and then he just goes, you know what, I'm tired of this. And
yeah.
Which is a funny joke, but then it's also like there's a feeling in the air that, yeah, it maybe run its course. This kind of like his sort of approach to getting into places is to kind of really just like be loud and play on that kind of the racial tension from the first one, which is like as a black cop coming into these white spaces. Yeah,
and I think that was actually the element of it. You know, I was being, you know, facetious on the air by doing the fish out of water bit. But that was the actual tension of that first film. It wasn't just that there were
you're like, oh, Beverly Hills is so crazy. Look at these women with their small dogs. It was actually about being a black cop in a majority white and affluent area, right? And let's say it as well. I mean, obviously people have the nostalgia and people will have their different opinions, but my perception of Beverly Hills Cop is that it was a smash hit, not because it was good, but because it hit at the right time. It was a an Eddie Murphy vehicle, literally, yeah. You know, and people wanted to see him doing his thing in whatever capacity, right? So when you have that moment of him going, oh, you know what, I'm too tired for this, how much is the room kind of thing, it's a funny joke, but it does actually explain the problem with the whole movie, which is like, that's all this thing has.
Yeah.
That's all this thing has is Axel Foley charm. So when even he's tired, I'm kind of like, well, then what am I doing here?
There was a great quote from a recent interview when he was doing the promotional rounds where he was just like talking about like his with regards to the action sequences and stunts. He's like, you know, don't give me things that you wouldn't give to like Morgan Freeman. Like, dude, like acknowledging that he is like old and that, you know, he's not going to be like running around doing these things. And so like the majority of the action sequences are him just like in a vehicle, just driving through something. Like, it's not a lot of him kind of like running around.
He's
not
sliding on the hoods of cars.
No.
But that is also a problem, because I think about that opening sequence and, you know, of him driving around Detroit, and it's meant to be like, this is where Axel belongs. This is his place. Everyone's shouting out like, hey, man, how you going? Hey, Axel, you keep it up, all that, you know, thumbs up kind of stuff, which is so funny for a cop in Detroit. But the element of it is that it is clearly Eddie Murphy behind a wheel, like on a green screen. There is no tactile nature. I would have loved to have seen even a shot that had him, you know, that pulled back and had him visibly in a car moving. Right? And that is the element where you go, oh, yeah. And maybe that was storyboarded, but he ain't getting off the set to go on location.
And sometimes it's a shame because, you know, obviously you got to meet the demands of the time and to top those, you know, stunts and to make it. And, you know, there is an element where there feels like there's a bit more, you know, filming of things on the street and kind of some location shooting. It doesn't feel all completely green screen as some other films do. But it has that vibe of, like, it's not quite the same in terms of the sense of watching someone feeling like they're getting older. But like the last Indiana Jones movie, where it's just like, this would be better if the stakes were just like kind of reduced and you would feel the sense of age of the character just to be in a dangerous situation rather than, oh, let's escalate this. And he's just like in this long chase sequence that, you know, keeps going over and over. You know, it's just like that it would have been like just as charming enough to watch him kind of do something a bit more small stakes than what they have to do with this movie. But this is more than I thought we'd be talking about. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. And definitely, if you have not seen the original trilogy, the first one is a product of its time, but it's at least kind of, it, you know, I think it has, when you watch it now, it is a document of the 80s and that kind of like high style 80s quality. The sequel rides that wave because it knows it's going to be success and is more of an action movie than a comedy. The third one is where things drop off and it feels like Eddie's heart is not as much in it.
Well, in short, because the third one is now notoriously regarded as this god-awful sequel. They even joke about it in this film to a degree. Why is it so bad? Or are they overcooking it as well?
That's interesting because I did watch it again. That was one that I watched a bit as growing up, and it was a bizarre one in that, like, John Landis directed it, and apparently, you know, John Landis and him worked on Coming to America and Trading Places, but I think after Coming to America, they had a real falling out, and there's some pretty spicy interviews that Eddie Murphy did in the years after that, which, you know, was kind of bizarre that he would work with him later on. So there are some moments, but it is a very airless movie. It has that kind of John Landis in the 90s kind of just like, this doesn't like move like a movie. It has a lot of director cameos in it, so you will see George Lucas point up at Eddie Murphy, like try to rescue someone from a Ferris wheel, going, "Hey, you know, like." That's fun, and it doesn't have all the original cast, like Judge Reinhold's in there, but Hector Elizondo kind of plays the John Ashton character. And I would say that Bronson Pinchot, who is also in Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., is quite funny in the third one. He's not in number two, but in the third one, he shows up and he's basically playing his character Balky from the sitcom Perfect Strangers, if people might remember that. But it's funny how, as someone else pointed this out, Bronson Pinchot, he had a small role in the original Beverly Hills Cop as a kind of European art dealer who kind of, but like in this, it's kind of taken that he's like a long-term family friend. Like he knows Axel Foley's daughter and has a whole bit with them. So quite bizarre. But, you know, that's how these things work, where even like a minor character in the first one is brought back as this kind of like, one of the family kind of thing.
This relates to a problem I have with the third season of The Bear, which we're not going to talk about, but maybe we'll talk about that off the air. But it has reminded me of a similar complaint, weirdly. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., I don't think we'll ever speak of it again. But it's been a pleasure speaking to you about it today, Tristan. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And thank you all for listening. And definitely I would like to, hear more, or maybe we can reconvene with Pam about more incidents in cinemas and when it is appropriate to shush.
We did get people. A text. Someone said, perfectly acceptable, Pam. No loud munching ever.
There you go. Straight from the listeners. Thank you so much for messaging in, and we'll catch you at the next episode of the Movie Squad podcast.